This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlela.
Hello, Gary, and hello to our podcasters.
I think you're out of breath. You ran in late, Lions. Shame, you come from Pretoria.
Yeah.
So it's good to see you.
Thank you.
On today's show, Lions, we're exploring whether the maintenance system is living up to your expectations or is it in disarray?
Yeah. Gary, that's a very touchy subject, especially given the fact that many children in our country grow up without actually having both parents raising them. And in some cases, when they... unfortunate circumstances come into play where there's divorce, many of them become very spiteful where the children are caught in between the lines.
Lions, our guests today know all about what's going on in the maintenance courts, and let me introduce them. First up, Craig Bailey. He's a specialist family law attorney of Johannesburg. Welcome to you, Craig.
Thank you, Gary.
And then joining Craig is Brian Mallory, who knows of the runaround his partner, I think, was given in the maintenance courts. He knows all about it. He also has a company called S4, the number 4 cloud.co.za. He's designed software to assist you in maintenance matters. We're going to give him a minute or so to explain that to us. Welcome to you, Brian.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it.
Cool. Now to our main guest today. She's flown up from Cape Town. She's here with her little bag. And we are delighted to welcome her. She is Felicity Guest, and she heads up an NGO for maintenance issues. It is known as, quote, Child Maintenance Difficulties in South Africa.
Wow.
With a very vocal Facebook membership of close to 50,000. And if Felicity and this group, with all their contacts, have their way, you are warned. Yeah, hey, Wena, pass off, right?
No, that's a brilliant, what, is it Kwaito? I don't know what genre
it's some Duo Pass Off featuring Fresh.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It hasn't, it's had 1,300 views on YouTube. Pass off for this group, known as Child Maintenance Difficulties in South Africa. They're taking the system on by the scruff of the necklines.
Great.
And they're hoping to bring about positive changes. We await those. Now, on the other hand, what about the deadbeat Papgeld X, who has the complete murrin with his ex-wife, and when asked by the magistrate to sum up why he doesn't pay maintenance, he replies,
I'll have to sum it up this way. She could turn a straight man gay. She only bitches when she breathes. I'll have to sum it up this way. She could turn a straight man gay. She only bitches when she
Yeah, she only bitches when she breathes. 8,200 views on YouTube. A funny country song for you, Lions.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Let's give out our Facebook details. It's The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Lionel always says...
Oh, well, you can touch base with us on Twitter at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W.
Yeah, Lionel's been doing this for 3 years and he still can't remember Hertzlaw. Our partner today is Legal Talk South Africa with its gigantic Facebook membership. Have a look at theirs. Yes. And also to Felicity's. They're both very powerful.
Certainly.
Cool. Lions, let's talk to Felicity. She's flown up from Cape Town. She knows all about what's going on in the maintenance courts because she's been a victim herself of maintenance problems. Have you?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I entered the underbelly of the justice system 8 years ago when my ex divorced me fraudulently through the Pretoria High Court. and went through the process of having that set aside, because while that was in place, I couldn't claim maintenance because there were no children, according to my divorce.
Really? How many kids did you have?
I have five.
So how did he divorce you without you knowing about it?
Well, apparently through a syndicate that knows how to avoid the family advocate's office. So there's no children. The address was an open piece of land in Pretoria somewhere. Was my residential address.
Were you actually finally divorced without you knowing about it? And was it official?
While I was trying to serve papers, oh yes, it went through the Pretoria High Court.
Yeah. So he walked around as a divorced man without the obligation of having to pay anything.
Correct, and got engaged. And
I'm sorry to laugh at this, but I mean, has it happened to others? Or?
Apparently at the time, I threatened to chain myself to the Pretoria High Court building because I wanted to see the presiding judge and to ask him how he could grant the divorce, because as a layperson, I could see that the documents were fraudulent. The dates didn't correlate with anything. I was thrown out of the police station when I went to go and lay a criminal charge, and that I ended up at the High Court.
I suppose when thinking about it, Craig, it's not that difficult. You serve a summons. Well, it's got to be personal service for a divorce. How do they get the sheriff to give a service that it was served personally?
I can tell you.
Yeah, how did they do it?
Well, apparently myself and my ex-husband went into the sheriff's office in Pretoria, and apparently I signed for it. I produced my ID, and I signed for it, apparently.
What happened to that sheriff who gave that false return?
Well, we're waiting for the results of the trial. I did report it to the sheriff's board, but the sheriff that I complained about actually sat on the board. So I insisted on an independent person.
It gets worse, yeah.
Who came on, but they can't rule on it until there's a verdict from the trial, which we're still waiting to go to trial.
What happened to your so-called divorce? Was it set aside?
I did have it set aside.
And then you got back as married as such, and then he had married another woman in the meantime?
No, he hadn't married her, but I did send her an email eventually going, please don't plan your wedding because he's still married to me. So I'll let you know. He's a liar, so I'll let you know when I am divorced and then you can get married to him.
Strange story. Okay, so now you got back and you remained a married couple.
Correct.
Did you obviously divorced him properly afterwards?
I did, but he frustrated it because he wanted me to sign a confidentiality clause.
To say what?
Well, to shut me up.
Confidentiality in what respect?
That I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't talk about anything.
So did you?
No. I went to 702. I went to Newsweek.
You haven't come to us. This is the big one.
Okay, but that was a long time ago.
Yes.
That was 7.5 years ago.
Okay, so...
So I have been divorced now. Eventually he gave up because he realized I wasn't going
to
give up.
And what happened to the maintenance for the kids?
Well, I got quite excited because I thought at least I would then get maintenance. Three of my children were still minors at the time. So I thought this is fantastic. At least I'll get maintenance. Because he actually punished me by withholding maintenance. And he was blatant enough to say so in his emails. Not very happy with you. I'm not going to give you maintenance.
You personally or the kids?
No, well, obviously the kids, but it was directed at me.
Yeah, were you working at the time of during the marriage?
I had a hobby that eventually generated enough income that gave me the courage to ask for a divorce. Up until then, I was a housewife because my son nearly died. My handicapped son was really ill and he nearly died. So, and having five kids at one stage, my five kids were at five different schools. So he then defaulted. He never offered maintenance. He didn't stick to the order ones. So I then started going to maintenance.
Was he a businessman with an income?
Good income? Self-employed.
Self-employed. Mm. Those are the dangerous ones.
Yes, absolutely.
Those self-employed guys. Mm. What kind of business was it? Or is it?
He's in the mining industry.
Okay. How did you live when you were married? On a high standard, or
my neighbour was Raymond Ackerman.
Oh, really?
Okay. For a long period of time.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm.
He didn't get the residence fraudulently, did he?
Yeah. So then.
So I mean, you lived like kings.
No, we didn't live like kings. It was an ego thing that he had to have the correct address. I promise you, we lived a very modest life. Mm. But my kids were at private schools. Mm. But we didn't go overseas on holiday. I've never been overseas. We really lived a very modest life, for me anyway. Mm. I don't know what he did because I don't actually know who I was married to anymore.
How long were you married for?
21 years.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you look so young, doesn't she? Yeah. Okay. So you eventually got divorced with an order that he pay maintenance?
Correct.
And he didn't pay? He just didn't pay?
He just didn't pay.
So what did you do?
So eventually I was facing eviction. And I then approached the maintenance court and I set those benches warm. I did have an advocate who came on board who represented me pro bono because he felt sorry for me when he heard about my fraudulent divorce and my circumstances. Mm. My attorney had also represented me pro bono. Not initially, but when it took a turn, then he obviously realized that this is going south and I'd never afford it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, that was at the end. He sent me a bill of 5,500 rand and that was only hard costs.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I sat those benches warm and there was just no results.
Where was this? In Cape Town?
In Cape Town.
In the Cape Town itself?
Not the main court. It was Wynberg Court, yeah.
Okay.
And I just never got anywhere. Then it was to serve papers to bring him to court, and he lived in Johannesburg.
Mm.
So to get him to court, they said to me, you go and serve the summons. So I said, okay, give it to me. I'll do it.
Mm.
They said, but you got 4 days because this is the courts are closing, whatever, whatever. I got a friend who worked for SAA and got the papers up here. I got a friend here to pick the papers up, go to SAPS, serve it on him. They sent it back to me the next day. It was a turnaround time of 3 days that I got the summons in Cape Town, had it delivered in Johannesburg, and
well, so it can be done.
Well, out of desperation, that's what you do. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't have been my job.
Yes,
that is a court's function.
Well, this is something we're going to talk about. I mean, what is happening? Are people forced to do it themselves?
Mm. More so today.
Yeah.
Just about. I don't know what the percentage is, but on my group, it's a common thing. I was given the papers to go and serve, because for us, it's the only way that we have certainty that the papers have been served or not. Because otherwise, you wait three months for a court date.
Mm.
You get there, you spend the whole day there, only to be told at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, sorry, there's no return of service.
Okay, so the maintenance officer has clerks that are supposed to serve these things. Is that how it works? No, Craig, how does it work?
Depends on the process, but generally the South African police services have to serve criminal summons.
Mm.
They also serve the directives upon the parties to attend at court.
Mm.
But as we've just heard, very frequently, if you want it done, you have to do it yourself, unfortunately.
Is that how you see it being done in practice?
Well, if you want to make sure that it takes place, that's what you have to do.
Do you use the sheriffs of the court that charge a fee for doing these things?
Very frequently.
Yeah. Is that how people are listening and they're not quite sure. Mm. You use the sheriff, and you pay him a fee for it, 300-400 rand, whatever it may be.
Sure, but if you want the thing done, you have to make sure and take it into your own hands to make sure that it gets done, otherwise it will get lost.
Does the maintenance officer give you the actual summons, calling the person to court, the first summons? Do they give it to you and they say, you take it to the sheriff and get it served?
Generally, it's the clerk, the maintenance clerk, who gives the directive to you if it's for an inquiry.
Mm.
And you only see the maintenance officer on the first occasion that you arrive at court on the date specified in the directive.
Yes. Okay, so the advice is take it to the sheriff of the court. Do people know which sheriff to take it to, or are they advised by the clerk?
Sorry, Gary, that's problematic for me.
Yes.
Because I've seen it on my group where members, one, have had to go and deliver it into a different province.
Mm.
Besides that, there is a history of abuse.
Certainly.
So when they pick up the summons, they go to SAPS. First of all, you are abused at SAPS because they don't want to be doing this. Okay? Mm-hmm. It takes them away from crime fighting.
Mm.
They then take this, they go with you to go and deliver the directive.
Whose car do you use generally?
Well, if you arrive on public transport, they will take you.
And if you arrive in a car, do you take your own car?
I'm not too sure. I think they might follow you.
No, they don't. They actually just say in the event that they were to get into an accident, SAPS will not be liable. Mm. So as a result, they actually prefer going into a van or a state-owned vehicle.
Okay.
Yes.
And when they get there, a lot of my members have been abused by the person that they're trying to serve it on or the family. One of my members was actually beaten up. And when she went back to the police, and he refused to sign it, so she went back to the police station, she came back, it's wrong.
Mm.
It's wrong. You can't assume that it's going to go well all the time. So when with the regulations, you've got to take worst case scenario into account.
If you can afford it, get the sheriff of the court and pay him his fee.
Mm.
And that's his job.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's
if you can't, I mean, if you're one of those poor people that just are desperate for the maintenance to survive, you have to use the police. Yeah, you've got to just grin and bear. Mm-hmm. Is that how the system works?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
So we're as complainants, are taking on functions of the Department of Justice.
Well, isn't that happening all over the place? There are many functions that the state should offer that we're forced to pay for. Private schooling and,
yeah,
and so on.
Yeah, but these are people that have got no resources, that are being forced to find the resources in order to try and get financial assistance for their children. Mm.
You started this group, Child Maintenance Difficulties, and you have 50,000 members, Facebook members, close to. How did this happen?
Okay, so last year, I started this 4 years ago as a result of my own journey. I extended the invitation to my immediate friends on Facebook because I wondered, if I'm battling and I have resources, what is everyone else doing?
Yeah.
So, and also I made a commitment to pay it forward because I was fortunate enough to get pro bono. Mm. With all my experience, I wanted to pay it forward.
Yes.
So I started the group and it grew slowly in the beginning. January last year, we were at 5,700 members. Mm. So from January last year to today, we have exploded.
Which is very sad because it's not a very positive, it's a great group, but it's not as a result of positivity. It's negativity that's brought people together.
Correct.
And everyone is clubbing together because they can't get action out of the system. Is that really what's happening here?
And also they can't afford legal assistance.
Mm. Okay, so if they can't afford legal assistance, how do you help them?
Well, one, we inform them of their rights.
Mm.
It was quite surprising because I'm the kind of person, I will find out what my rights are.
Yes.
And that's how I got through it, demanding my rights. So it became, I was quite surprised that people just didn't know their rights. You know, they would go there and they would be treated badly and being told the biggest load of hogwash and they would just accept it and walk away.
Mm.
But so what we do, it became important for me to, but that's empowerment. I'm very big on empowerment.
Mm.
So part of that process is to inform you of your rights because let's admit we've got a fantastic constitution, but it's not worth anything if we don't know what they are.
Mm.
So we inform our members of their constitutional rights to get to know the Maintenance Act, download it, highlight the parts that are pertinent to you and take it to court with you so that you've got quick reference.
What's going wrong, very simply, in this maintenance system?
Okay, I believe that it's always been bad and there's never really been an acknowledgement of the different layers. Okay, so you can say certain systems aren't working, but there's many layers to this that has not been recognized and dealt with.
Yes.
So one is the legal process. But underneath all of that, look, reasonable people who have a moral compass will not end up in the maintenance court. They probably don't even need a maintenance agreement because they're acting in the best interest of the child. So they're going to, out of a moral duty, they're going to resolve it and act in the best interest of the child.
Is that few and far between? What percentage of people actually that get divorced or have children together sit down and work it out without lawyers, without maintenance officers? Craig, do you have any idea?
How long is
a piece of string? Yeah?
Well, I don't believe there are any statistics for that specific issue.
Yes.
But I can vouch for this. The people in the maintenance court are not the reasonable people. It's the unreasonable non-payers who generally are brought to court.
So if you look at that behavior pattern, so this is my analysis. One, it is unresolved conflict, which could be from a place of pain, personality disorders. Because who in their right mind has spent a portion of time being part of children's lives and interacting with them every day, very aware of what it costs to raise the children, suddenly at the point of the end of the relationship, whether it's by divorce or moving on to another relationship, how do you suddenly not know what children entail to bring them up? Mm. How do you suddenly, where you were spending a reasonable amount on your children, to suddenly saying, sorry, you can't afford more than 500 rand?
Mm. Yes.
You know, so who are you punishing? I think they ultimately are trying to punish the ex-partner and by default are denying the children their constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're aware of that, and that's where I think our judiciary has failed, because when somebody goes into court, so there's a lot of domestic violence and abuse that these people carry. So when they go into the court, that is not even recognized. So you see the intimidation happen when the respondents arrive with legal representation. So the claimant has no financial resources. So she arrives there not really knowing her rights, already intimidated in anticipation, like, what is going to happen today? And the ex gives her one look. She immediately becomes defensive and is triggered.
Mm.
And then the intimidation starts with the legal representative. My experience, and my own personal experience as well, and the replies from the group is, so they get into the maintenance office, and the maintenance officer is not strong enough and is not trained in sensitivity training to pick up these nuances. The legal representative is normally a stronger personality.
He's a boom-boom divorce
correct.
Attorney.
So
yeah,
he bullies the maintenance officer. The maintenance officer then is not representing the claimant because it is a state against the respondent.
Mm.
And it becomes a biased outcome in favor of the person who has the finances to take legal representation.
How do you see these maintenance officers? Are they weak? Are they overworked? Are they just tired? What should happen?
Probably all of those.
Yeah.
I think that they're overwhelmed because there's a moratorium on the replacement of staff, and that's been in place for 2 years.
Mm.
So their caseload is tripled, probably more than that.
Mm.
And for them, they're probably just trying to get the cases out of court as quickly as possible.
Yeah, like a sausage machine, just get get the people in and out as quickly as
possible. So there's that, and I don't believe that they're sufficiently trained because my members go there and they go, this is my right, and they go, oh no, that isn't. And well, here it is, and they show them. And then they become arrogant and they go, are you trying to tell me how to do my job?
Mm. Yes.
Mm. So,
how do you expect one person, what's their caseload? Thousands, hundreds.
Gary.
Brian, you want to take.
Yeah, if we look at the Randburg Magistrates Court for the month of May, there were 68 maintenance cases that were put through the court, but 68 maintenance cases weren't processed in the court. And the reason why is because of a whole host of problems. Firstly, the actual process starts manually with paper and manila binders, right? So you walk into these...
The old docket kind of stuff.
Yes, so you walk into these offices and it's like a bomb's gone off in there because there's just all of these dockets everywhere, papers everywhere, and they themselves have got a lot of frustrations because of a lack of resources. Mm. So the reason why not all 68 maintenance cases were processed is because if you look at the maintenance officer there, she doesn't have a laptop or a PC on her desk, right? Then for the people that do have those type of facilities available to them, the type of programs that they're using are old, they are dated. You can't actually log onto the system properly. Mm. Everything hangs, and because the system is overwhelmed, let alone the staff, it inevitably crashes. And and I ask them, and it takes over an hour to log a case onto the system.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the basic details. And then there's bigger problems over and above that. And having experienced going into court and often arriving there and finding that information is missing, you know, specifically with maintenance, because it's such a personal thing, because it involves your children, people are extremely emotionally triggered. And the very first thing that goes through your mind is that the other party has passed a bribe somewhere so that the paperwork doesn't appear.
Mm.
And maybe occasionally that might happen, but because of the actual way things are done, it's very easy for one of those manila folders to fall over the back of the desk and get lost into, you know, oblivion.
Mm.
And there's the maintenance cases, there's the divorce cases, all of these documents are flowing to and fro. So the actual way in which they're working is extremely challenging. And then there's also the amount of staff. So there used to be two maintenance officers at the Randburg Magistrate Courts. unfortunately, one of them passed away, and that vacant position wasn't filled again. Now what's happened is you've got one person doing two people's work under extremely difficult circumstances. And over and above that, what's now happened is the jurisdiction of Randburg has increased as well. Mm-hmm. So now it includes Cosmos City, it includes Diepsloot, and I think there's another one as well. And so it's just
millions of people within that jurisdiction.
It's a very challenging situation for the staff there, over and above all the other problems.
You know, I hate having a show just bitching about something because it's kind of counterproductive. It gets us nowhere. But from bitching about something, as we are today, which is good, goodness will come out of this because we need to change things.
Yes.
And if we can. And I know, Felicity, you had a high-level meeting in Pretoria last week.
Correct, yeah.
Tell us about that and what you're trying to do.
Okay, yeah. So I wrote a letter to the president in April. And
which president was it then?
Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yeah.
And that was in response to his SONA speech, where he said that women and children will become a priority to him.
Mm-hmm.
So in my logical mind, I go, well, if the head of the snake doesn't know what the problem is, how can we expect the tail to fix it?
Absolutely, yes.
So I sent a letter to his office, and eventually I got a reply from them. And I was copied from his office. What they did was they sent it to the Pretoria court manager to respond. And in my 8-page letter to the president, I quoted where our constitutional rights are being violated by the maintenance system and therefore Department of Justice staff.
Mm.
And my response from the court manager was, well, thank you for starting Facebook. Give me all the credit.
Yeah. Rah, kind of thing, yeah.
And also that I must tell my members to watch DSTV channel Pay Your Pup Cult, and they will get all the legal advice they need. Mm. Well, I nearly fell off my chair. So I managed to get his personal email address, and I emailed him, and I emailed the president's office going, well, thank you. This is how serious you take these issues. Mm. And let me just remind that court manager that a lot of the people I represent live on a grant of 410 Rand.
Thank you.
So are you telling me that I'm just now going to tell them to subscribe to a pay channel? Mm-hmm. How are they going to feed their children?
Mm.
And I expressed my disgust.
Mm.
So... I escalated. Eventually, it got to a high level at regional, and they're going, can you please send us your file number? I'm going, have you not read my email?
Shit.
Can you please go back and read my email? I am talking about all the women who are having these difficulties.
Mm.
So eventually, it was escalated to national level, and they invited me to come for a meeting. So I went, and we're not funded, so my members did a crowdfund to get me there. So I went to this meeting, and it was a two-hour meeting. The best outcome I'd hoped for was for them to go, we've heard you, and we are going to do something about this, a commitment from them. So by the end of that meeting, I got a lot more than that. I obviously can't say it publicly because it has to be an official announcement from them.
Mm.
But they said to me they would try and achieve something significant. And they would let me know by next Friday. They came back by 11 o'clock the next day, and they said, it's been approved, budget, it's on.
What's on?
Well,
you
we'll
can't
have
tell
to
us
wait.
We'll have to bring you back.
But it's fundamental. Yeah. It's huge progress in terms of us as society and a civil organization that they've heard and that they take serious the issues that we've raised.
How does the public protector fit into all this?
Okay, so I, in fact, I took a member to the Human Rights Commission, and as a result of the, I had protest last year, and I presented a memorandum to the Minister of Justice.
Mm.
That was also escalated, and it ended up with the Human Rights Commission. They're busy looking at it. When I took one of my members there, they said to me, they admitted that our constitutional rights are and our human rights are being violated, that they would take it on and investigate, or it would go over to the public protector.
Mm.
Because for me, to lodge a complaint against one court is not going to achieve the desired results. Mm. It is in every single court. So it needs to be a huge investigation into the process and the system and the causes and find solutions for it, which this breakthrough from last week will certainly start addressing some of the causes.
The Family Advocates Office is getting more and more involved. What's that involvement?
Well, I think that there's a possibility that maintenance will move over to the Family Advocates Office.
Is that beneficial?
I think so, because, you know, as much as there's two separate acts and they're two separate courts, they're related.
So, if you want normal maintenance that you'd go to the Magistrates Court for, you'll land up at the Family Advocates Office in future. Is that a...
No, I think... I'm not too sure. It might be from an oversight.
Okay. Position. You mean from them looking after it?
Correct. Yeah. Accountability.
Yeah. Lance?
Yeah, no, because the Family Advocate, what they do is basically they overlook at the settlement agreement insofar as this, for the maintenance of the children, the well-being of the children. If it does not really look after the wellness of the children, they actually decline whatever divorce or process has to go forward. So it's actually a good thing that they actually get to be involved, because they'll need to see whether the maintenance is going to be reasonable enough for the child to actually live on it. But in most cases, just to add to what she was saying, majority of these women who actually go for the maintenance, you would find that it's women who actually have got nothing. In most cases, they don't even have information, let alone money to catch a taxi to go to a magistrate court, for that example. Mm-hmm. So if then an official person can simply say, go and subscribe to a pay TV to actually get information, that for me, it's quite, okay, we can swear, it's uncensored, it's just quite bullshit, to be honest, because they've got a SABC, which reaches a million of South Africans. Why not actually have a program on that, just so that people get to be educated about their rights and the law, and what is actually, what sort of steps they can actually take if they're not actually happy with the outcome of the law. So that for me just shows the arrogancy of some of these officials who sit in very comfortable chairs, but when it's time for elections, then they come and kiss our little babies in the shacks, and as a form of PR exercise. But here the real issues are not actually being addressed. That for me,
I hear you, Lance. Is the law skewed in favour of the respondent? And I think you've said it is.
Let's
hear from Felicity on this one. Is the respondent getting a better deal?
I think it is, yes, because the onus is on the claimant to prove that either he has the means to pay or that he's defaulted and bring all the information. So from my experience, how do I do that? Eventually, I mean, my advocate did a deed search, and while my ex was saying he can't afford it, he did a search on the company's registrar, and there were 12 companies registered to him. Some of them were shelf companies. Now, I'm saying our experience is there's a lot of people hiding assets, people who are self-employed. They're hiding assets. How does the ordinary person who doesn't know and understand and have the resources, how do they provide all of this information to the courts? Because the default or the respondent sits in and goes, I'm unemployed.
Let's talk to Brian about this. I think that your partner at the time had this very problem.
Yeah.
Tell us how you dealt with it. And how? Give us advice on how to deal with this.
Gary, in essence, what had happened was the particular situation was that her ex-husband wasn't paying his full maintenance, and when he was paying, it was drips and drabs. And we knew full well that he was living large, to put it mildly. Mm. And so each time that she tried to hold him accountable, he would hit back bigger and harder, and there'd be more and more resistance. And in essence, what finally happened was that there was the kickback where he said, well, fine, I'll take you to court for a maintenance reduction.
Yes.
And that was actually beautiful, because he landed up shooting himself in both feet.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was the magistrate had seen that in actual fact there had been cases beforehand, and then he had requested that each party submit their last 6 months' bank statements, and then that way they can verify expenses. And like what Felicity was saying, that the onus is on the respondent usually, in other words, the lady, to prove the costs of the living expenses of the children.
So the claimant,
I beg your pardon, the claimant.
Yeah.
And so then, with the submission of the 6 months' bank statements, what happened is we got this, and we could see immediately that there was income coming in, and he by no means was was the poor person that he was claiming to be. Mm. So for an hour after work every single night for just over 2 weeks, she read out the date, the transaction description, and the amount, and I captured it into Excel. Mm. And basically we worked through this, and of course Craig Bailey here was our specialist lawyer helping us. Mm. And what we did is we then captured all of his expenses on his check account as well as his credit card, and then we had a look at that. And the basic principle was we took the information at hand and we divvied it up into what is necessary and unnecessary.
Mm.
And
what did you find?
Oh, well, there was on the limited information, because they were drips and drabs, but put together, there was an average of 12,500 rand cash withdrawals per month.
Mm-hmm.
Cash. Zero paid in maintenance, but 12,500 rand in cash.
Do you know what he used it for?
I suspect a whole host of things, but I'll get into some further detail of what there was evidence of.
Mm.
So there was evidence of him going down on holiday over December to the coast with his girlfriend, spending 1,760 rand at Red Square, which we all know it's just perfumes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 1,000 rand spent at Brown's Jewelers and Four Ways Mall, and eating out all the time. Mm. And we decided that it really wasn't a necessary expense to eat out every night and have drinks at your five closest pubs around where you live and the clubhouse in your complex. And so we basically presented that he was spending...
So Brian, I'm going to interrupt you a sec because we've got so much to cover.
Sure.
The problem with the average person claimant is that they don't have the wherewithal to do this analysis.
Sure.
It's some little old lady or young lady that she may be a bookkeeper, then she's good, but if the average person can't kind of dissect every item. You've come up with something that I like, and that's a software program that can do the analysis for you. What you would spend hours and hours doing, you can do it in 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to give you a free advertorial, but I will quickly. What is your product called and how does it work quickly?
It's called S4 De Facto. Mm. De Facto means an actual fact. Mm. And it came about because Craig Bailey here said he was impressed with the information we put forward. He said, jeepers, this is great.
If I load all the information into there, is that going to be the trick to give up to the magistrate very quickly so that he doesn't spend hours trying to sift through nonsense?
It's the first time that you can actually see where money's been spent. That's the bottom line.
S4cloud.co.za.
S4cloud is the holding company, and the product is S4 De Facto. And basically, you get an income report per person and a spending overview per person. So now you can see different categories and subcategories, and for the first time, you can actually see where money's being spent.
Isn't there something... To the great advantage of a claimant, Felicity?
No, it absolutely is. Yes.
Okay. Because I've been in court, in the maintenance courts, where papers are thrown up to the magistrate. He's supposed to himself look at bank statements. He doesn't know what's going on. He hasn't got the time. The maintenance officer hasn't got the time. No one has. We want it neat on a spreadsheet up. This is the bottom line. And the magistrate can see at a glance what the amount is or should be.
Mm. I mean, here again, this is civil society and people who are having to come up with these. The Department of Justice should have done this long ago.
Yeah, well, maybe you should sell this because there are a lot of people indigent that can't afford the
program. That's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, if you take the poverty level in this country and the unemployed level in this country, you cannot expect marginalized people who are having to flip a coin twice on what food to buy and when to buy it to then have to go and purchase something like this that is critical.
I think this is a product that should be offered by the maintenance officer. Yes. You know, put your information in there and it pops up.
I've already been to the family office in Pretoria, same people that Felicity...
Family Advocates Office.
And I've proposed an entire system for them for maintenance calculations, divorce calculations, their paperwork and their filing.
How do they receive you?
They absolutely love it, and they claim that
we've got no money.
Exactly,
budget.
Yeah, so that's what they said. And
it's a tragedy, isn't it? Yeah.
And so there's a whole host of solutions on the table, in essence, to help the poor person out there who's being taken advantage of and being exploited.
One thing that I really do want to talk about is the self-employed asshole that says he's got nothing, business is bad. Mm. How do you deal with that? And you, one of those attorneys that act for these assholes, Craig Bailey or some of them, you get away with murder often. You're a specialist at this. That's your job, and that's how you get paid. There are people that defend murderers that get paid as well.
Actually, I more often...
The other way around.
Is it the other way around?
The poor lady who's in the position with the self-employed husband.
Yes.
But yes, that is a very special creature. Mm. And you are very reliant upon the maintenance investigator and the functions they carry out to get the information, because you very often are not going to get it voluntarily from this person. So the maintenance investigator, in terms of the Act, has powers to subpoena any institution to obtain information. But the problem is the system is failing us. Mm. At Randburg, as Brian mentioned, there were previously two maintenance investigators, because one of them has moved on. There's only one left, and his workload is so tremendous that he cannot get down to getting those mandates
If you
out.
Believe that your husband, if you're a female, your husband has got shares in such and such a company, or he's got a bank account somewhere, you need to subpoena that, don't
Correct.
You, because he denies it.
Correct.
So a subpoena should be issued out of the maintenance officer's office, and the information should be brought to court. How do you can't get that subpoena out? Is that the problem?
Strictly speaking, in terms of Section 6 of the Maintenance Act and the powers given to the maintenance officer, they have an investigator who assists them, and that person has to carry out whatever mandate the officer gives to them, which would be to subpoena the companies for the share registers, etc. Unfortunately, and most of the time when you go to a trial, which is in a Section 10, the attorney has to themselves issue out the subpoenas and subpoena the entities, Dukas Tecum, to bring the documents to court.
So you actually do that for claimants?
Correct.
You issue the subpoenas
Correct.
Yourself?
That has to then be issued, but the reality is that a maintenance inquiry for these high-level individuals becomes almost akin to a insolvency inquiry.
Mm.
Because you're dealing with volumes and lever arch files. The documents are tremendous.
If you're one of those fortunate that can afford an attorney, do you reckon that people should go to an attorney?
I certainly advise that you do. Mm. The difficulty is, if you are unrepresented, as we've heard, you don't generally know what your rights are and what the remedies are to certain situations. Although I have found, in my experience, that the lower income earners, matters are resolved more expeditiously.
Yes.
Because there's not as much to hide. So it's more simple to assess the situation.
So the fact that someone's self-employed doesn't mean all is lost.
No, not at all.
But unfortunately, you've got to issue a whole host of subpoenas.
Correct.
And that's a problem on its own, unless you have an attorney to help you with it.
Correct.
The maintenance court should help you, but they overload it.
Unfortunately.
And who pays for the subpoena to be served, and who does all that?
In terms of the Act, the state is supposed to carry that cost. But unfortunately, as you know, as an attorney, a lot of these burdens are being placed onto us as attorneys to carry out the functions. So the client then has to pick up the cost of the subpoena and the sheriff's return of service.
There's a woman called Samantha. She's one of your members. She said there that the Department of Justice should improve their staff. And she says something here. They must stop telling moms to use toweling nappies for babies. That's apparently what's going on. You don't need you don't need the Pampers and that. Just get toweling nappies.
Well, it's not just that. It's opinions that are being given instead of making legal, meeting the legal requirements.
Yeah.
So women are going there and they're being told to get cheaper accommodation because shame, he can only afford X. Mm. Look, we all know when relationships end that you've now got two sets of expenses. You've now got two. We all understand that. But the portion going towards supporting the children is borne mainly by the primary caregiver, which in this country is majority women.
Mm.
And the majority of women earn less than men do. And the greater portion of unemployed people in this country are women. So when you look at all of that, who is carrying the brunt end of this?
Yeah. Craig, you wanted to talk about the Constitutional Court, or do you have a few minutes for that one? And how the Concord has seen this whole
Certainly.
Issue.
Certainly.
Yeah.
In 2002, there was a judgment, Bannatyne versus Bannatyne, where the Commission for Gender Equality was joined as the amicus curiae. Mm. And the Commission for Gender...
That's a friend of the court.
Correct. Sorry. The friend of the court submitted a lot of information regarding the deficiencies in the maintenance system.
Mm-hmm.
Which was noted by the Constitutional Court, in which they obviously were indebted to the Commission for that information.
Mm.
But the long and the short of it is that in terms of that information that was submitted, it shows that there are huge problems in the maintenance system which a maintenance debtor can manipulate to his advantage.
Mm, as we know.
As
50,000 people
correct.
Know, mm. yeah.
And in this particular matter, the claimant had gotten divorced in 1999. Not even a year later, she was faced with non-payment and she was in the maintenance system,
mm.
which ultimately all of her attempts in the maintenance system, save for one occasion, failed.
Mm-hmm.
She was failed by the system and she went to the High Court at the time to have her ex-husband committed for contempt of court.
Committed being meaning being sent to jail.
Contempt of court sent yeah. to jail, yes. Yeah. Which the High Court granted the order. It then went to the Supreme Court of Appeal, which then overturned the committal. And she then petitioned the Constitutional Court, where they then debated the rights of women and children,
mm.
Section 28 of the Constitution, and obviously that all matters affecting minor children must have their best interests at heart.
Mm.
So ultimately, they then dealt with the deficiencies in the
I mean,
system.
We're going back 16 years.
Correct.
Yeah.
And still, their deficiencies.
The regrettably,
yes.
nothing much has changed.
Craig, if someone is not paying their maintenance, the thing that everyone wants is that the fucker go to jail. Sit, you know, just go there into a cell to teach you a jolly good lesson.
Consequences.
Is that available?
Yes, it is.
And is
it's happened.
Yeah. Yes, is it happened or is it happening?
It is happening, but yes. it's generally by and large in the High Court. So on your decree of divorce, you would typically apply for contempt of court in terms of the decree. And very often, judges are issuing out committal orders.
Okay, so that's in the High Court if
Correct.
You can afford to get there.
Correct.
In the Low Court, in the Magistrates Court, in the Maintenance Court,
I've yet
you
to
shake
hear.
Your head, yes. Felicity, no. Pop, yeah.
There are arrests.
Yeah.
But they for contempt of court, for not appearing in court.
Ooh.
Now, that's a travesty.
So
the
if
fact
a
that you
yeah.
are abusing your children financially
yeah.
is just like, we'll just, you see,
yeah,
the
we'll
problem
forgive
is
that, but if you don't come to court, you'll go to jail, yeah.
Sure, Gary, the problem is they're issuing directives now, Ooh. Which there's no criminal consequence to not complying with a directive. So a directive
yes.
is essentially an invitation to come to court.
Mm.
And damn, if you don't come, maybe on the third time, we might start getting a bit grumpy about this and now issue a subpoena. Only then can a warrant of arrest be issued for not coming to court. Okay, so bear in mind...
Sorry, if you're not paying your maintenance, you invite her to come back to court to explain why.
Yes.
But you won't go to jail for that.
No.
Yeah.
And this can take... Bearing in mind with the workload in the courts, a minimum of 3 months between each thing.
Mm.
So you go and you apply, then you get a date for 3 months down the line. Mm. You sit there the whole day and they go, sorry, the directive was served, but he didn't come, or the directive wasn't served.
Mm.
You get another date another 3 months down the line.
Mm.
And then it doesn't... So
in
you
the meantime, you're struggling,
correct.
You've got
correct.
No money.
Exactly. Mm.
And the man's riding around in his fancy car correct. And with his new girlfriend and going to restaurants.
Life moves on.
How selfish. Yeah.
And yeah. when he lies in court as well, that's known as perjury. And so that crime of perjury is also... there's no consequence in a magistrate court. You have to be in a higher court in order to press charges and for the person to go to jail for perjury. Because we've experienced where there's been a complete lie on the amount of income that this person allegedly earns. And it's 190,000 rand more than what was stated in months, you know, covering months where there's zero maintenance paid. So it's it's a big frustration.
What about a garnishee order attaching his salary? Is that available?
Okay, I'm going to say this up front because this includes garnishee orders, directors and everything. Okay, so there's very particular laws around garnishee orders. So the garnishee order is served on the employer.
Mm.
Okay, it's up to the employer to implement the garnishee order. It's up to the employer to notify the courts should the
person leave.
Should the person leave.
Mm.
That is not happening and there's no consequences to that. So the only time you become aware that the person has left their job is when there's no maintenance.
Mm.
You then go and go. And also it's taking 3 to 4 months to get a garnishee order implemented. Mrs. Jo Soap is having to go and phone the employer and go, why have you not instituted the garnishee order?
We're going to end off in a few minutes. Give us some positivity. What's the answer? in the next few minutes.
Okay, yeah. This is the impact that we've had. Okay, There is one court who the court manager joined my group, and I've developed quite a close relationship with her. She then added all her maintenance officers onto the group. We have no complaints about that court. It's not to say that there aren't challenges. Yes, there's lots of cases, but they're aware, the court managers are aware, and the maintenance officers are aware of what our experiences are in the court. And they are working collectively. If there's something, she'll go, can you please tell that person to come and see me?
I've got this
with two court managers, because that was my thing to the family advocate
office. How many people fall under that jurisdiction? Are we talking millions?
Large.
Or? Yeah, is it a big area?
It's a big area. It's a very big area. It's probably one of the busiest courts.
Is it a Cape area?
No, it's up here.
Oh, really?
So I had a three-hour meeting with quite a senior person at the NPA the last time I was here, and I went to her going, can we work together and find solutions? She was absolutely open to it, and we've started that process. My thing at the Family Advocates Office is, can we work together? Can we find solutions together? Can we come on board? And it was well received, and there's a commitment to do that.
You're an NGO. You're not funded by anyone, and yet you spend your life doing this.
Well, I've bankrupted myself, yes. But this is bigger than me, because this affects over 20 million people in this country. And if I don't do this, who's going to do it? This change will happen very quickly, because I will start getting very aggressive.
Stephanie Temer says, thank you, Felicity. God bless you and everyone who made it possible for you to get to the meeting in Pretoria. Yeah. Mm. I pray the precious blood of our Heavenly Father over each and every one, and she gives you a moi.
Yeah.
And Zelfa Sahi, thank you. Doesn't even begin to say how much we all appreciate what you do for us. Okay? And it goes on and on and on. People are so grateful to you. With your 50,000 members. It's marvelous. Keep going. Keep up the good work. And you are making a difference. Lines?
Yeah. No. I take off my hat for you. Thank you so very much, because your work is going to impact so many other women out there who are actually disempowered because of the bullying that they receive from their husbands. But thank you. Keep up doing the good work. And where possible, we'll keep on championing for you.
If you get told by a maintenance officer that you must use toweling nappies instead of Pampers. Yeah. What do you tell them?
Fuck off.
Lytle said that.
No, what the hell?
To our specialist family law attorney, Craig Bailey, many thanks. I know how busy you are, Craig, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, if you need a good family law attorney, this is the guy. You've been doing it for years and years.
Absolutely.
You're a good man. He's a good man.
He's great.
There you have one of your clients. Brian Mallory, I think you've got a good product. Try and sell it in to government, if you can.
Do you have otherwise, a BE partner?
It's just.
It just has. Yeah. Good. Many thanks to all of you. Steph, before you get the last word before we let you go, and thank you a million times for choosing Cliff Central, for flying up to be with us. It's absolutely, whoever funded you or helped you get here, our hats off to them. A bouquet to you for all the good stuff. Really, people like you make a massive difference.
Yes.
It's just amazing.
Okay, so I was just this ordinary person, and I really encourage everybody to pick up a pebble and throw it in the pond.
Mm.
It doesn't matter what space you are. I happen to work in a particular area, which is maintenance. Pick up a pebble, throw it in the pond. Mm. And don't worry where the ripples are going to go. They're going to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. As a South African, I'm not getting onto no rowboat and going to Europe. I'm committed to this country. I believe in Ubuntu. And I've grown enormously through this. I'm hugely grateful. I've learned so much about my fellow South Africans. I've been humbled in so many ways. And that's it. Just pick up a pebble, throw it in whatever space you can. The ripples will go somewhere.
Yeah, I've just got 1 minute to say that the average age of divorce is 37 for women and 42 for men.
Mm.
There you go. And most divorces occur after 5 to 9 years of marriage. And 19% of divorces happen after 10 to 14 years. I hope I'm not scaring the newlyweds. The average age of divorce is 37 for women. What age did you get divorced?
52.
Oh, goodness, you look great. Okay, cool. To our listeners, especially to you, many thanks for listening. I hope this is a positive show for you. I'm sure it is. We've enjoyed it, Lions.
Thank you, bye.
Yeah, cool. See you next week. Cheers.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.